Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Slaying Your Lane, the podcast. My name is Elizabeth Yvebenene.
And my name is Yomi Adegeke.
And today we have a very, very special guest, our second guest. And you know, last week we brought you Ovi, and this week we are super, super excited to be speaking to Neo, who is a singer and an artist, and we're so excited to have her. Hi Neo.
Hi ladies, hello.
How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm not too bad today. Just like trying to navigate this mum thing, and every day is different, it's wild.
We're going to get into a little bit of that later on. But can I just say, as someone who listens to your music but has never actually heard you speak, you have like the most soothing speaking voice.
That's so,
so
true.
Nice,
that's
right?
So funny. Okay, well, amazing. Well, maybe I need to do like a sleep podcast where I just like
have no one told you that sleep.
Do you know, I actually have heard that a couple of times.
Well, yeah, see, general consensus.
You have the best voice.
That's nice to hear.
It's really, really nice. Thank you. So can you tell us a little bit about how lockdown life has been treating you? Obviously there's been a lot of changes for everybody, but very much so for you. So how is it? How have you been finding it?
Well, yeah, for me, lockdown was, it was, honestly, it was so wild. Like, I was heavily pregnant when we went into lockdown in March.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I had my baby during lockdown, like the peak of it. And so I had her in May. And so there was so much like, going on, you know, like I wasn't allowed anybody in the room with me for quite a lot of the labor, so I did a lot of it on my own apart from the very, very last part. So that was quite scary. And then afterwards, I guess, you know, when you have a new baby, you get to have a celebration in terms of like lots of family and friends coming around. But obviously due to COVID and like so many other people, like those amazing moments that you're supposed to have with your family and friends just couldn't happen. So, you know, had a lot of family coming to the gate and leaving, you know, rice and peas and things like that. and just waving from afar. So I have to say, like, it was pretty intense, and maybe I wouldn't have chosen that time to have had my first baby.
Oh gosh.
And how has it been, how has motherhood been so far?
Well, are any of you mums?
No, not yet. No.
Couldn't be further from we've got a while, sis.
Well, that's what I thought.
We need the other person.
I thought that as well.
The big elephant.
It only takes one night. Damn it. Honestly, it is crazy. I mean, yeah, it's really hard to put into like a sentence. I guess all I can say is like some moments are amazing and some moments are just really, really, really tough, and like they can happen within the same morning. So it's a real journey, but you know what, I'm definitely a stronger person for it.
Thank you so much for your honesty, and obviously huge, huge congratulations. You kind of said that, you kind of mentioned that you're like, look, it really only does take one night, and like, you know, we're here saying, oh my god, we're so far away from it. Did you feel like motherhood was something that you were prepared for, or was something that you like were planning for or thinking about? Or was it one of those situations where it's like, okay, I'm here, I've just got to go all guns blazing and just learn along the way, if that makes sense?
Yeah, definitely the latter. Like I knew I wanted to be a mum, but I just assumed perhaps I'll just try and push it to the latest time possible. So I wasn't expecting to be a mum so soon, and also because I'm in a new relationship as well, so yeah, maybe wasn't planning on it, but it happened. You know, and so yeah, it was just like, okay, here we go, let's just go for it and see what happens. So all guns blazing indeed.
Yeah. And silly me, like major silly me, I forgot to introduce the fact that you were Grammy Award nominated for your album Saturn. So congratulations.
Yay. Oh, thank you very much.
Huge, absolutely huge. How did you feel when you found out?
Well, honestly, I have to say, I was like over the moon. I was really happy. Like, you know, Grammys is just like, it feels like the top of the top, kind of, in terms of like a nod to you're on the right track. And so when I did get the call, and especially being British as well, I have to put that in. I think, you know, I just associate like the Oscars and the Grammys with American artists and like American, you know, Hollywood, essentially. So to be like a British girl from South Woodford and to be at the Grammys was just like, and sitting on the floor with, you know, like Beyonce and Billie Eilish and I don't know who else, there were so many amazing people there, Alicia Keys. It was like a real honour, even just to be nominated and being in the same room with such incredible talent.
And yeah, I think the fact that you brought up that, you know, the fact that you're a Black British woman as well, like, I feel like that nomination as Black British women, like, I guess because it's something we see so rarely, even that recognition for Black British women here, let alone, you know, in the States, we kind of take it really personally and everyone really gets behind you and is rooting for you. But I guess we were very interested in how you felt that your experiences differed in terms of here and the reception you received in the States, because a lot of Black female artists speak about the fact that it's actually often easier, or that you know, the reception they receive in the States is stronger and more supportive than the one they receive in the UK as Black women. What would you say your personal experiences have been with that?
What I would say is that definitely, I mean, for me anyway, like my fans are sort of spread equally, like across the UK and America and Europe and other places like South Africa and Australia. But what I would say is that, you know, like the difference between the UK and in America is that like R&B and hip hop and things like that, that's their pop music over there. Like they're playing that constantly on radio, like their versions of Radio One and like Capital and things like that. All you're hearing is Black music. And so it's natural that like as a British artist making you know, some form of R&B, like it found a home over there and it gets like more plays. Whereas over here in the UK, we know that pop music is like, well, it's not R&B and it's not hip hop. Do you know what I mean? So it doesn't really have a platform here. It does have a platform, but it's very small. Do you see what I'm saying? And like, and the music that is big, that is of Black origin, most of the time isn't sung by a Black artist. So often in the UK we don't get to be the face of our own music, and I only think, to be honest, the reason why artists like myself or like your Ella Mays or Mahalia and Georgia and etc are like able to kind of make a dent in America is because it's because the way that we consume music has changed. Like before, like back in the day, like it wasn't about streaming, it was about the record label saying who can go onto radio and radio deciding who they're going to play, and that's how people blew up. But now that we got to streaming and audience can find the music that they like on the internet, it meant that I was allowed to create a fan base without being signed at the time, and like I was able to tour without being signed and find a home of listeners across the world, which I believe could have never have happened before, like basically the age of the internet and music.
That's really true. A lot of Black female artists specifically talk about how you know, the internet has changed the game and how the way we consume music actually has benefited them. So is that something that you've sort of seen in your career as well? I mean, you've kind of touched on it already, but would you be able to speak about the ways that sort of, you know, the online space has sort of helped you and other Black female artists push their music?
Yeah, definitely. For me, I came up as like a SoundCloud girl. So in 2014, I believe it was, like, I put out some music, and I SoundCloud was a really big thing right there, especially for like new artists sort of making like alternative or like demo-y cool music. And so I came up through that world alongside Kate Trinada and the internet, literally the internet, the band. I should be able to name a few more, but my brain's just gone a bit blank. But a part of that world, and it was really, really amazing. I don't think I could have cut through in any other way, to be honest. So it just found, I think the first song that I put out that actually like got traction was a tune called So Good. And it was a collaboration with an artist called AK Paul, and it just went off. And from there, I was able to build through SoundCloud, and then I was able to move on from that and actually like perform live and like put music out and then start doing it via like the more traditional route of making albums and things like that. So yeah, the internet is really important for new artists, regardless of like, you know, race or sexuality. But I just think that like it was particularly helpful for me as a Black British artist, because I couldn't see another way that it was going to pop off. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, that was the route that was only ever going to work for me personally.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I was going to ask about your upbringing in terms of like getting into music, just because I read that you wanted to kind of like do contract law. So I was the kind of wanted to know, when did you kind of have that conversation with your parents that you were going to basically when and how did you have that conversation with your parents that this is what you wanted to do? And how confident and passionate like did you kind of like put that across?
Wow. Well, I remember the conversation I had with my mum and my dad, and I think I was about 18, basically. I think I was about 18, and like most, you know, like Black parents, you know, it is about getting a job that is something in the world of like doctor or lawyer, or, you know, just something that's like you need to be qualified for. So obviously when I like took up an interest in music and saying to my parents, you know, I think I want to be a singer, I remember it landing not too bad, but that I think was because I was also studying law at the same time. So I think they were just a bit like, yeah, you can do the singing thing, basically, because I had the law thing going on as well. But when I was going to university and I was deciding, actually, I don't want to do law, like, I just want to sing, like, I know I want to be a musician. I remember being like really scared to have that conversation with my parents, just thinking that they were just going to sort of reject it, though I was going to do it anyway. But actually, they were like pleasantly supportive. I don't know if it was because I was going to university still, regardless, you know, I was going uni and I was studying music there. And I think that even just going to university for them is like an achievement in itself. So they were like, as long as you're going uni, you can study whatever the hell you want. And perhaps they just thought, you know, I'd study music, but I'll be a teacher. And a teacher is like, you know, that's a good job to have. So so I think they were thinking that was going to happen, but it didn't. I became a professional musician, and my mum, let's just say, still sends me law degree, online law degree courses to this day. I still get them in my inbox. Grammy or no Grammy, she still wants me to be a lawyer. So, you know what parents are like anyway. I think being a creative, you know, they just kind of, it's new to them, that whole idea. And I think that idea of having something to fall back on, like what's your plan B, is always brewing in their mind, because that's just what safety means to them. Do you know what I mean? They just want you to be safe and secure, which is a lot of what they didn't have growing up. So I understand. But, you know, we're all creatives here and we're all smashing it. So
do you feel like now, like, because you have your own daughter, that you, because I guess, like, obviously what you're saying is true, and it's like very empathetic from your parents' perspective. And I think that, like, a lot of us when we're growing up, like, we cannot see where our parents are coming from. Like, we fully just feel like they're just trying to stifle us. But I feel like your perspective is very kind of like, it acknowledges the reality of our parents wanting that security and safety for their children. Do you feel like that's something that you can sort of, I mean, it's too early to say relate to now, but understand better? And I guess, have you even thought about, like, what your response would be to, like, your daughter's kind of career prospects? Have you started thinking about how you will react to whatever decision she makes in that sort of area?
Yeah. I mean, I won't know until it actually happens. But I like to think that as I am now, and as the person I am now, I just, you know, my daughter's too, she's welcome or to be whoever she's gonna be. I honestly don't mind, and I think as a parent it's really important for me to not project onto her, to not try and condition her into a certain way or what I think she should be. If she chooses to work part-time in Sainsbury's as her career, then that's what she wants to do, because, like, success is down to an individual. It's not what I think success is. So success for my daughter may be actually staying at home with the children that she has and just working part-time in Sainsbury's, and because actually she gets to spend more time with her children and teaching them and growing with them, and that's what success means to her. So I can't dictate anything to her. So right now she's free to do and be whoever she wants to be. And I hope that when I listen to this podcast back in 20 years, that I hold true to that, of course.
I like the fact that you acknowledge it might actually change, because we say one thing and you never know.
Yeah, I'm an open person, so I'm open to change. Yeah, so for now, that's what I'm thinking.
So can you tell us a little bit about your work with the Kaleidoscope Orchestra? Can you tell us a little bit about who they are? We've done the reading and it sounds fantastic, but can you tell our listeners what it's all about and how the collaboration came about?
So I worked with the Kaleidoscope Orchestra for an advert opportunity that came up during lockdown. And they did an arrangement, a really beautiful arrangement of a song of mine called Another Lifetime. And it was basically done over lockdown, I think, actually. My daughter was 2 weeks old, and I remember it, the opportunity coming through, and I was just like, should I be doing this or should I not? But essentially, I was going through like a tough time with being a mum and navigating it all, and we didn't have much help because we were in lockdown. And the bits and pieces of work that I did do, even if it was just answering emails or like just singing a bit, it just made me feel so good. It just made me feel so human. So when the opportunity came to work with Kaleidoscope and do this advert for Oppo, I was just like, yeah, I would love to do a bit of work. So that's how it came about. They wrote a beautiful arrangement to Another Lifetime, and we all recorded it on these handheld phones and made an advert basically from our living rooms.
Obviously, you said that you guys did this over lockdown. Would you say that lockdown has sort of changed your creative process?
I wouldn't say it changed it, to be honest. I would say no.
How has it stayed the same?
Yeah. Oh, give us a secret.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? The secret to, for me anyway, for creativity is collaboration, collaboration, collaboration. And it's hard to collaborate in lockdown. It's not the same thing to work with someone across the internet or, like, you know what I mean? Like across Zoom. Like, it's just, you can get bits and pieces done, but it doesn't flow. So for me, I was desperate to get back into the room with other musicians and make things creatively together and having the energy in the room. Like, so I personally didn't find lockdown that creatively inducing. In fact, I found it the opposite. Like, I didn't really have much creative energy for writing an album, which is what I should have been doing.
How would you say motherhood has changed your creative process, if at all?
Well, so far, I'm just like, I don't know, 20 weeks in, so not too much time. What I can tell you is that it's making me more efficient with my time. Mm. So, and I think that's actually, for me, it works really well. Because I think as a creative person and as a musician, you can go into the studio and you can have no end time. So you can start at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, you can come out at 2 o'clock at night, and like you can have either a really terrible song or no song at all, or maybe a good song. But what I've noticed is that, like, with my daughter, I only have so much time I can give to creativity. So the fact that I have a start and a finish time really means that you have to get the work done. Like, there's just no messing around. There's no ordering off Deliveroo. It's like, there's no going outside to smoke weed. It's like, come on, guys, we're in the studio, let's write. Okay, we've got 4 hours, boom. And then every single time I've done that, I've got a song, and I've got a really good song. Just because you're up against the time, and that may not work for some people, but it really works for me. So I say I've been more time efficient, and as a result, I've been more creative because of it, because of her, should I say.
That's a brilliant byproduct. Ooh. I was waiting for you to be like, oh my gosh, it's been so much harder. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like the efficiency is really getting results. So that's amazing.
Yeah.
I wanted to take it back to the Kaleidoscope orchestra collaboration. Can you tell us why you chose that specific song? And also, what was it like to hear it reimagined, like, classically?
So I chose Another Lifetime because I just thought that it would be the nicest song to arrange classically. It's quite an open song. It's got strings, and it's got like tones of, it's got classical undertones, should I say, in it. And I felt like that would be the most sort of like, the easiest song to arrange classically. And also, I hadn't ever done a live version of Another Lifetime yet. So just felt like the perfect song, and hearing it back in a classical way was, you know, it was really cool. It was lovely to hear it reinterpreted in a different musical genre.
Yeah. Is it ever hard to like move on from an album that was like so like well received into like a new creative project? I know you said that you're so much more efficient now, and motherhood has kind of like really helped that. From a, I guess, you know, when you've done something that people really love and it's had great great reception, is there a challenge to kind of like start fresh and do something else, especially something like this, and step out of your comfort zone a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I think you want to make something as good as or better than the last thing that you've done. And always at the forefront of my mind is, will my fans like this? And so it's always scary to move on to the next project, and I think it can be so scary that you almost don't get anything done because you're just so worried that people won't like it, but that's art, isn't it? It's subjective. And I may play one song to my mum and she loves it, and I play the same song to my best friend and she doesn't get it at all. So what can I do? Like, all I can do is just trust my own instinct and be like, do I like it? okay, that's all I need. And so moving on to this next project has been tricky. And I'm still trying to find my feet with it and still trying to find what I want to say, because I started the album before there was a pandemic and before Black Lives Matter and before COVID, etc. And so what I had to say before then is completely different to what I had to what I have to say now. So I'm just trying to marry the two things, or not. Maybe they're two different projects. I don't know. So I'm still working it out in real time.
So we are so grateful, not just for the fact that you've taken the time out of your day to have a chat with us, but more importantly, you have written an absolutely beautifully written essay for us for our book that actually comes out. Well, it's coming out tomorrow, but I think by the time this podcast comes out, it will actually be out. Your essay, We Were Made for These Times. Thank you so much for taking the time to write it. It's especially considering like everything that's been going on, like just because even pre-lockdown, everything was just very busy for you. So thank you. And thank you for writing it so well. Can you tell our listeners what the essay is about and more importantly, what the genesis of it was? What was it that moved you to write it?
Oh, well, number one, thank you for your kind words about the essay.
You're very welcome.
It's really lovely. I don't think I've written an essay since, like, I don't know, A-levels or something.
Wow.
So. So it was just like, oh, can I do this? But we gave it a go. When I say we, I mean, I'm just talking about an imaginary person here because I'm just, I always say we now. So, yeah, the essay is called We Were Made for These Times. And I actually wrote the essay way before, anything that was happening at the moment, like, as we just said, like the pandemic and the protests and things like that. But, you know, I just felt like... nonetheless, after Brexit, which was like the premise for the question that we were given, like, what is life like for Black women, or after Brexit, what does the future look like, Black British women? And so I just kind of stewed on that and just thought about it, because after Brexit, you know, we had to deal with a lot of racism that was, it wasn't new, it was just under the carpet, and it had been laying dormant for so many years. And like, it was at a point where, you know, it was like, does it even exist? Like, not that I ever felt that, but I just sensed that perhaps like my other friends, like if I would ever talk about an incident that was racist, like my other friends who weren't Black would just sort of roll their eyes, just like, nah, come on, that didn't happen. Or like, that doesn't happen over here. And so that's kind of basically what my essay was talking about. It was talking about how like, Brexit basically unrailed the carpet of truly what Britain is dealing with at the moment, and that was like, you know, a lot of racism, like a lot of the rise of the far right, you know, us being a generation that is faced with quite a lot of adversity, whether it be climate change, you know, we don't have the money necessarily to buy houses and things like that that were a bit easier for, you know, our parents or the generation before us. So it was just talking about that and just talking about the hope that's coming from it, and just realizing that actually, even though we've been hit hard, like we are the people to change this as well, and just kind of injecting some hope into the future. Do you know what I mean? And just and just letting us know that there are people out there who are doing great things, and more people to come that are going to change the planet, and just to keep going. And that's why I called it We Were Made for These Times. But I didn't know, you know, how fitting it would be.
Yes.
Really now.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. So I was going to say, like, that's, I think, the best thing, but also genuinely one of the most, like, it's sad, it's moving, it's also, like, hopeful things about the essay is the fact that, like, you know, it was so relevant when you filed, but then how many months later, it's still so relevant and applicable to the situation that's happening now. And I love that it is so hopeful, but I was just interested in... how hopeful you still feel if you were writing that present day with everything that's changed, with everything that's happened. Do you feel like anything would have drastically changed overall in terms of the essay, or do you feel like it would still be that overarching message?
I think the only thing that I would have changed so about the essay would probably be like to, because the question was open around what's the future looking like after Brexit, perhaps I wouldn't have like based it so much around Brexit, if you know what I mean, because like it felt like once the pandemic hit, once Black Lives Matter and the protests hit, it kind of felt like, what's Brexit? Do you know what I mean? Like, what is that anymore? Do you know what I mean? Like, so even though what I've said is still relevant, regardless of like the situations that we're dealing with, perhaps I wouldn't have honed it so much around then. But you know what? I didn't know that it's impossible to have even known that there was there was worse to come. but I think nonetheless, like the words still ring true, regardless.
Definitely, yeah. So I know we've got to wrap up soon, but I wanted to ask you, what does being a loud Black girl mean to you? Because some people, it is about the volume of their voice, and you know, I was that loud Black girl at the back of the bus, like going through Peckham, and everyone has got their own kind of version of what being a loud Black girl means to them, and what it. So I wanted to ask, what does that mean to you?
Being a loud Black girl means to be unapologetic. I think that being Black in Britain before now, I would say, to be honest, was to kind of feel a lot smaller. That's how I felt. Like, so for the area that I was raised in the school that I went to, like I was like one of the only Black people in an all-white space. So because of that, you know, I found that I made myself smaller. I found that I made myself quieter. I found that like things around me which celebrated my culture, I didn't want to celebrate because it was different. It was so different from everyone else's. And when you're growing up, all you want to do is fit in. So what you do to do is you strip away those parts of you which make you different. And so what it means to be now as a loud Black girl that I am is to put all of those pieces back in, put back in all the culture, put back in you know, my hairstyles or the way that I want to carry myself and just be unapologetic, I can't even say the word, unapologetically Black, and not be ashamed. Like, I mean, maybe ashamed is a hard word, but like not want to strip it back or not want to kind of like minimalize who I am. And I think that's who I have now become today. But it took years and years, because it takes years to strip it down, so it takes years to build it back up. But I'm proud to say that I'm loud and I'm Black and I'm a girl.
love it. Thank you so much, Neo. I thought that was a perfect point to end on, like such a high.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Thank you. So that was our interview with the absolutely lovely Neo. She is such a treat to talk to, and honestly, her essay, We Were Made for These Times, is genuinely such a standout in the book, though the book is filled with amazing essays, as you will soon see. So thank you for listening, and until next time, I'm Yumi Adegoke.
And I'm Elizabeth Uvebenene, and see you guys soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.